You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more. Today on our show, I'm talking with Jay Stuckey. Jay, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me. It's a real pleasure.
And where are you right now? Are you calling from your studio? Or?
Yeah, I'm actually in the process of gessoing some panels and getting ready to get back into work. It's a perfect time because they're dry, and then we get to do the interview, and then I go back to the second coat.
Tell me what's happening. I mean, that is what's happening in your studio, I guess, but then what is going to – what's next? Is this a series you're planning? And if so, how do you approach that?
Well, for the last, I want to say, at least 5 years, all the stuff that I've done, paintings and drawings, have been based on dreams and visions. I'm one of these folks who keeps a book by the side of the bed, and I've been writing my dreams down in the morning for the last, I want to say, 15 years. But more specifically, within that, oftentimes sort of themes or genres will come along and stick around for a little bit. And right now, there's been a series of groups of cheerleaders, anywhere from about 3 to 8, jumping up and down and then using their pom-poms and their outstretched arms to create the letters from the semaphore alphabet to spell things.
And the semaphore alphabet is, that's for train signals? That's kind of an antiquated alphabet for train signaling? Is that what that is?
Yeah. I believe, I haven't heard of it with train signaling. I first saw it when I was a kid, and it was always on those old World War II newsreel film clips, and it was the way that ships would either communicate to each other or aircraft carrier might communicate to an airplane as it's coming in. And yeah, it's a system where a person has a flag in each hand, and then depending on how they configure their arms outstretched, it's a different letter.
So this makes you know, more sense to me, even if when I look over all your work. So what we're seeing in here is your kind of language, your kind of iconography, for lack of a better word, of your dreams, the world of your dreams. Is that the case?
Yeah, I'm one of those folks. I believe that we all share an inherited makeup, that there is a collective unconscious that we are all a part of, and that, and I know this is a well-worn phrase, but if you can get to the genuine root of the personal, you can oftentimes tap into something universal. And so oftentimes the images are being put up to see what resonates with other people. You know, is this an experience that you've had in one form or another?
But for you, it must be so much more than imagery. And I'm kind of curious about this, this long process that you had of writing down dreams. I always imagined, and I've never done it consistently, though I've done it sometimes, right, but that if you do it consistently for as long as you've been doing it, it's a type of self-psychoanalysis where you're may even have some of the same benefits, where you're getting to know yourself, and I suppose a collective self as well, but that you're getting to know yourself in a peculiarly kind of articulate way, or you're understanding something that you normally wouldn't unless you were in perhaps Freudian therapy for years or something like that.
Yeah, that's the hope. And obviously things have come up, right? Obviously, I hope I'm getting better. That things, you know, reoccurring patterns, themes, whatnot will start to come up, and then you just can't help but notice them. And I have periodically at times, I'm not right now, but I've worked with Jungian analysts before, not only just in terms of day-to-day stuff, but also because it ties in directly with my process in the studio. And it sometimes helps to have a second, you know, set of ears, mind, eyes to discuss the work with and what's going on. You know, it's not so much about looking for a single answer as I think I get excited by the questions that come up from it. And the whole idea being that, you know, what you're always sort of after is never a resolution or a quote-unquote answer, but to always have that metaphorical thorn in the side, that thing that's just at your craw. Like, as long as you have something, a question that's almost obsessing you, then you're on the right track, because that's where the true growth is going to come from.
So is it possible to talk about some of those questions, maybe to go back even to when you began working like this? Were there initial questions that are still there, or just initial questions that started recurring?
Well, I'm trying to think how to get around, not get around, but how to tackle that one.
We don't have to talk about the question directly, but just
sure.
Kind of that.
There were definitely themes that were, say, more reoccurrent consistently in different periods. Because every now and then I'll go back to an old book and read and say something as mundane as my boss at the time would show up pretty regularly. And now that boss doesn't show up at all because I don't work that job and I haven't seen that person in, say, 6 years. But then, and from having done the readings that I have of Carl Jung's writing and whatnot, then you do start to think about this idea of archetypes, which I'm very interested in, and so that the boss could then become either a shadow figure or an old man, you know, or something like that, that you then expand upon. Does that make sense?
It does. That makes sense. And so this is changing, though, over the years. You know, there's one thing from having kind of like a boss at one time or a certain kind of stress in your life or relationship or whatever. But over the years now, this is over a decade, do you see recurring
right.
themes that you continue to mine that are also resonant, which is, I guess, what I want to get to next? You say, as you kind of show these works, you're not narrating them or really telling people what the narrative is, even though there may be one in there, but that certain things, maybe resonate isn't such a good word, but that people
right.
relate
no.
to or talk about certain types of imagery
yeah.
in it, and if
no,
so, what are those, what do they talk about?
Yeah, well, you know, and going back to the idea of archetypes, then what becomes interesting is that, at least to me, what becomes interesting and fascinating is that you see an archetype changing its character consistently over time. So it might be at the same sort of very basic thing that you may have been wrestling with since you were born, but it's showing itself in a different sort of guise depending on where you are in your life. And a classic example I use of this is there's the whole idea that every male, you have a female side of yourself, and every woman has a male side of themselves, or as Jung described it, the anima and the animus. And through almost since the time I've been writing down the dreams, there's the consistency of this blonde female figure that shows up. And sometimes it's a friend from childhood. Sometimes it's someone I dated when I was in high school. Other times it's a movie star or a personality. But then I started to notice that there's this reoccurring person. And only in one dream, it was about, God, 7 years ago maybe, I was at a dinner with some friends. Or I was walking up to meet a friend and his date for dinner, and the date ended up being, up to that point, I was always just calling her the quote-unquote blonde, and she stood up and held out her hand and said, "Hi, I'm Sally." And when I woke up in the morning, I was racking my brain, like, have I ever known a Sally in my entire life? And I hadn't that I could think of. And so then I started jokingly referring to her as Sally. So it could be Sharon Stone in one dream, but it's still Sally the blonde.
Right.
right. But then what's interesting, too, is in terms of or what I find fascinating in terms of the communication that takes place then with the viewer and the people who are looking at the work and that I'm talking to about it and being interested in I know you're hesitant to say the word resonate, but I think I'm comfortable with it. Is that
I'm comfortable with it. I just wanted to be as clear as possible about what that means.
But I'll have, like, you know, there was this one dream, or this was a reoccurring thing for a while, where there was either someone at a door trying to get into where I was, there was no lock on the door, and I'm holding the door trying to not let them in. And then sometimes that would transform into me going somewhere, and there's basically the idea of a doorman who is standing there who's not letting me get past to go through that door. And so this, to me, sort of started to be feel like this sort of gatekeeper type character, and maybe that's taking me to another level of consciousness where something else will be revealed, hopefully another question gets asked. So I start doing all these drawings and paintings of doors and doormen and holding people out, and I thought it was so iconic that it would resonate, and it's not that it didn't resonate, but people weren't crazy about it. But then I had this series of dreams where I was in a bathtub with a crow, and the crow's looking at me, giving me the stink eye, just like, dude, what are we doing in this bathtub? And I made a painting of that, and it sold while it was still wet. And I was like, wow. I always thought the more universal would be more universal. But oftentimes it's the really like idiosyncratic ones that are, you know, would seem to be really almost ultra personal that then resonate in a way. And I find
so wouldn't that be tapping into the kind of, because we're talking about like your dreams, your images, your visions, but as you were saying before, they're also this kind of data to test, you know, what other people are thinking, this kind of collective thought. Those things with the, I mean, popular paintings, actually one that sold would seem to be tapping into that more than any others, right?
Right.
So what are they tapping into? Like, what is that thing? I mean, I guess that's undefinable. The crow and the tub, that seems...
Right.
Do we have any idea what that's about?
Well, that's the thing. You know, for me, that's the exciting part. And again, it's the art critic Christopher Knight out here one time said, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was that successful works of art don't... successful works of art don't present an idea. They initiate them, right? So it's not this is what I'm thinking, but it, in viewing it, it causes the viewer to then have an idea come into their head, and ideally that's a question. So it's one of those things. And sometimes folks think I'm potentially shirking the issue when I say these, but I mean them genuinely, is that there's something I love about working with this imagery, and people will ask me directly, well, what does this mean? And I have great delight in going, you know, I'm not sure, but it's really important. Like, I think it's important. I just haven't gotten to it yet. And I don't even know sometimes if getting to it is actually it. You know, and then on the flip side too, there's been other things where, because oftentimes folks think of dreams or when dreams are portrayed as these really wacky events, you know, and like there was that commercial a while back where you're sitting at the breakfast table and a squirrel is talking to Abraham Lincoln. But oftentimes dreams can be, in certain respects, relatively mundane, and they can also sort of hit you over the head with a hammer in terms of trying to get a point across. There was this one that I had a while back that's a favorite story, where in the dream, because I live in LA, I was flying back to the East Coast to visit my parents, and I'd taken a bus to this one area of town, and then I had to walk up this hill to get on the next bus to take me to my parents' house. And normally it's not a big deal walking up the hill, but I have all these suitcases with me. I have four or five suitcases with me, which makes it a lot more difficult. So as I'm writing the dream down, I start walking up the hill. Normally this isn't a big deal at all, but this time it's really difficult because I got a lot of baggage. I mean, I've got a lot of baggage. It was like, oh, touche, unconscious, well played.
Well, that's very interesting, and I like that idea of it. And I don't see that as evasive either, but this idea that, of course, it can't be defined and you can't say this is what it means, you know, and unless you're going to write a interpretation of dreams book, which, you know, still always seems to be very, very narrow and culturally based or something. At the same time, it feels like there is something even more than Knight was talking about here. It's not just questions or ideas. You're also communicating with kind of another world. You know, I keep like ideas like ghosts and spirits and things that I don't necessarily believe in come to mind, because if there is something out there, or there is a way of picking up literally imagery or wisdom from kind of sources outside of our body, dreaming would kind of be it, wouldn't it?
It's to me, it's one of the most direct forms of access that we have to it. And that's why the process of doing it is so interesting to me. You know,
direct form of access to what? Well, no, I think I missed that word.
To the unconscious, to the collective unconscious, to this other thing, to this maybe primordial soup in the ether that connects us all in one form or another.
Right, or God, or like direct messages from God. I mean,
I'm not Oh no,
but I'm saying it's that too, right? Or something very subtle, or whatever it is.
Right, and not to expand on it, and I'm by no means a theologian, but. You know, there's that idea, especially, say, in Christianity with Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. So the Holy Ghost is the Spirit of God within you, you know, or the kingdom of heaven is within you. So there is this element of I would agree with that. And I hope we don't go further down this conversation because I don't remember the essay, but I do remember reading this great essay that Jung had written about coincidence. And it is funny because you do find yourself thinking about coincidences that occur and, you know, is a coincidence necessarily a coincidence or is it just a system or an order that we don't yet see, that we haven't pulled back far enough to see? And I mean, this is a very small example because this happened middle of last week, but I had this dream where I'm walking through a park. There's some people playing tennis on my left, and the actor Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, is walking towards me. He's got a round tinfoil plate, and it's got all this fried chicken on it. And he goes, "Hey, man, I just made this fried chicken. It's really great." And I was like, "Oh, thanks so much." So I take a piece from him, and then I keep walking. That's it. Dwayne Johnson exit, right? I wake up in the morning. I write that down. And then every morning after I write the dreams down, I normally go on a walk just to sort of wake up and get the day going. But it's also a nice time to reflect on it. But sometimes I will listen to music or podcasts, and I was listening to that one, what's it called, The Nerdist? And one of the people on The Nerdist was sitting there talking, and I don't even remember the context of it, but he said, "Oh, it was a great weekend for me because Dwayne Johnson tweeted back to me on my Twitter account." And they were like, "Oh, that's really cool. What happened?" And he goes, "Well, I had this dream, and Dwayne Johnson and I were in a gym working out." And I was just like, oh, my God. I mean, okay, is that a great connection? Has that given me some – like opening into the wonders of the world? No, it hasn't. But it's kind of fascinating at the same time.
And maybe we should just talk about if there's an upcoming show or what you're going to plan on doing next. But one thing I'm also curious about is, so, you know, we've been talking about kind of dreams and the mind and the unconscious in this interview. And I would imagine most people are responding to your work visually, although they may say things like Christopher Knight or discuss certain other ideas. Do you find yourself in conversations mostly about visual language, or do you find yourself in conversation more about some of the things that we've been discussing?
It's a mixture. It depends on who's in the studio or whom I'm talking to at the time. But oftentimes it is visual language as well. I mean, I definitely have, you know, a way of rendering that, I mean, to me at least, I feel in art you have a family tree in the same way you do in your real life. And it's often, I think it's healthy to know who you're related to. And so I definitely have a way of visualizing that, you know, comes from people I've been influenced by, people whose work I've always enjoyed, who's gotten me really excited. And so oftentimes that comes up, but, you know, for me, the references to the work being childlike will pop up every now and then in reviews or people writing about the work, which I'm perfectly fine and happy with because there is an element where I want to break what's going on down in the picture because it is figurative based, but to these basic archetypes. So blonde Caucasian woman, black male, old Asian man, and then go from that point forward. Oftentimes if it's someone specific, say like The Rock in a dream, is it really important that people know that that's The Rock in the dream if that ends up in a painting? I don't know. I don't think so. Hmm. I think big, strong, burly guy is pretty important.
Right.
You know?
Right, right. That's very interesting. And so the next – is there a show planned now? What's happening for the next show?
So right now I've been working since 2011 with Anat Ebgi in Culver City, and I have a show planned for her, planned with her. It's right at a year from today, which is sort of perfect because I've got some new ideas brewing and I want to have time to really gestate with them and work through them and whatnot. And then besides that, we just recently did Arco Madrid in Spain. And I believe there's a few other art fairs coming up.
And then how's that going? It seems like you're doing well. And I mean, you know, commercially for an artist, maybe commercial is the wrong word, but you're selling work.
Right. Yeah. So far, thankfully, you know, the relationship with Anat and being able to work with a gallerist who takes their job as seriously and works as hard at what they do as you do has just been an absolute blessing. I mean, everything changed the moment that relationship started. And it's been wonderful. I feel very, very just blessed, thankful, and I think there's some luck thrown in there too.
in conclusion, this has been great talking to you about all this. If this isn't putting you on the spot too much, is there a book you're reading or an essay or something that, you know, could be tangential to our conversation, but anything you're looking at or reading that's of particular interest or inspiring you right now that you'd want to share the title of?
Actually, I would. It's so funny because I'm normally an avid reader, and then there was about a 2-year period where I wasn't reading that much, and it was actually concerning me a little bit. And that has all turned around in the last couple months. And actually, just as a blanket, ridiculous, shameless endorsement, Don Quixote is easily the greatest work of fiction I've ever read. It's so wonderful, and it's 900 pages, but just settle in with it. Give yourself a year to read it. Have fun. It's an amazing ride. But currently, right now, what I just started that I'm loving is the book I'm a Beautiful Monster, which is the poetry and prose of Francis Bacabia, and that's just, it's wonderful.
Fantastic. I'm so glad you mentioned Don Quixote. That's absolutely one of my favorite books of all time.
Wow. Right? And the thing I love about it, too, is that a favorite film is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And everyone always thinks of that as Clint Eastwood's movie. But Clint Eastwood's so busy being tall, dark, and handsome throughout the whole thing that it's not really his movie. It's Eli Wallach's movie. Eli Wallach's got all the great lines. I mean, he's the real badass here. You know, he's hilarious, and he's also mean and bloodthirsty. He runs the whole gamut. And in that same way, I love that the book's called Don Quixote because it's really all about Sancho Panza. I mean, oh, my God, what an amazing character.
What a great character. And Cervantes is an extraordinary writer. It just made me think he was like Shakespeare, practically, just really amazingly talented.
Yeah. And
well, Jay, thanks so much.
I'm
sorry, go on. You go on.
Oh, no. I go on way too much. I think we'll stop there.
Jay, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure here, too.
Hold on 1 second. I'll turn off the recording, and we can still talk. Okay. Recording's off. Thanks, Dave. That was cool. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's something I just started, asking people their favorite books, and I'm always afraid someone's going to say, I don't read, but I suppose everybody reads something, or they can say something from Facebook, but that's great. I like that. I like that you said both of those, and yeah, Don Quixote's awesome. Yeah, I read that to my kid, you know.
Oh, it's so good, and it's one of those things where people are always like, you know, oh, are you reading it in the original Spanish? And I was like, no, okay, I'm not fluent in Spanish, but I'm still reading it, man. So back off.
Yeah, even the Spanish didn't hear it that way. My wife is from Madrid, Spain, right?
Okay.
And I initially read it like shortly after I met her. That's coming into that.
Right.
We're traveling through Spain, and I'm like, I'm gonna read this book. I'm gonna read it.
Yeah.
See what's up here. And sure enough, it was like I was cracking up by myself.
Yeah.
And she said as a kid they grew up on like all these derivative cartoons and stories that were basically, you know, Don Quixote watered way down. It had nothing to do really with the original, but it was just, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, just, and that's the thing, too, is it's such a great comedy. And I think a lot of books, when you grow up, it's almost like artists, you know, you think of, okay, Matisse is a famous artist. I know that. But it wasn't really until I was in grad school and I really started looking at him that I understood why he was put up there as a famous artist. And I was like, oh, my God, he should be more famous. You know,
it's
just
amazing.
Thing. Like you wake up and it's like you grow up and it's like, okay, Dostoevsky, famous Arthur, you know, he should be revered. And I feel like Don Quixote was kind of in that same category. And then when you get into it, I mean, one, it's a comedy. And then two, it's just like so reballed. I mean, I remember scenes of like Sancho getting sick and throwing up in Don Quixote's armor while he's asleep in it and stuff. I mean, just hilarious, you know.
Yeah, hilarious. Yeah, I remember reading the whole scene with Sancho Panza and Don Quixote at, I don't know, some tavern, and there's a pillow fight in the dark, basically. Everybody's swinging, and, you know, like the casks of wine are being cut. They think there's blood. There's all this, like, crazy.
Right.
And my kid, who was, like, I think 10 at the time, was just really started cracking up, and I thought, God,
yeah,
this is great writing that it can do that now, you know?
Yeah,
and that's right. With a translation, that's probably mediocre to good. I don't know how good the translation is.
You know, and that's
obviously
the thing. I read it in the English, and it cracked me up, and I'm still saying it's the best book I've ever read. So I'm sure it is richer, but I'm at the point now.
I read a biography of Cervantes after that, which was pretty good. I tried to read other books of Cervantes, and I never really got into another one like that one, but there's a biography of him that you might really like. He was quite the character. Cervantes was crazy. He was like, you know, in the war, he got shot. He was like traveling around trying to like collect taxes for the government. He was put in jail a few times. He died.
Oh my God.
Kind of nobody knew who he was. I mean, it was really kind of fascinating story and crazy.
Oh man. Oh, I'm gonna have to check that out. And it's funny. I thought about mentioning it, but what happened was this would have been back in maybe 2005-ish in that area. But I had a dream one night. I was in this old house. I go into this one room, and there's literally like a secret door to my left. And I go through that door, and then I'm in this like wood-paneled study, like this, you know, sort of stereotypical dad study from post-Middle Ages or something. And there's this old guy sitting there writing at the desk, and I walk in, and he looks up at me, and he goes, "Cervantes," and then goes back to writing. And I woke up in the morning, and my first thought was Cervantes' Don Quixote, so I went out and bought Don Quixote. I was like, okay, there's got to be something here.
That's a great story. Go on, what?
Oh, I was just going to say, that was okay? That was a good...
Yeah, that was great. I think that was great. I enjoyed it. I hope you did. Yeah, I think it's really interesting to talk about that. It's tough to talk about, you know, it's not tough to talk about anything, really. I decided because all I talk about is visual art, which is kind of impossible to talk about. But I think this was particularly interesting to talk about, dreams and how you perceive it, because your whole, to me, data collection of just dreams is the window into itself, into a whole different world. You know, which is interesting to discuss visually. And
for sure. And, you know, one of the things I didn't touch into because I thought it might go in a sort of a different direction, but, you know, you figure you spend a minimum of a third of every day, a third of your life dreaming. So there's, like, all this information and all this time being used, and why not mind that? And then also there's this part of me that has a bit of a Protestant work ethic. And so I got to admit, I love that even when I'm sleeping, I'm working. I gotta go to work. See you in the morning.
I love that. Well. Also, it seems to me it's so exciting that dreams are this kind of talk about an endlessly mineable kind of visual resource.
Right.
It's like all it is like endless amounts of images. Which I'm not that attuned to. I don't remember that many of my dreams. But if you are, what a source for an artist.
Well, and that's the thing. Up until that point, when I started working with the dreams, I would latch on to a subject matter, and I would literally run it into the ground and potentially go too far. And there was a period where, even though I've always been a representational painter for the most part, I had trouble working with the figure because I'd gone to Brown for undergraduate from 86 to 90. And at that period, when you would go into critiques, you know, it wasn't figuration versus abstraction. It'd be like, there's a white male figure in here. Why aren't they black? Why is it a man? Why isn't it this? So I felt like in a sociological way, I couldn't work with the figure unless I could answer for it. But I thought a painting in which I could answer for everything was going to be really stale and horrible. And then when I came across the idea of working, you know, from dreams, which is by no means a new idea, but when I started thinking about it in terms of my own practice, it became this wonderful element of being very free because in certain respects, I'm just doing what I'm told now. You know, why is that a black man walking down the road? Because it was a black man in the dream.
Right. They don't have the same kind of pressure to invent.
Right. Or to have to, quote unquote, answer for those types of decisions. That's already been taken care of, if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So.
It was great talking. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.